Q&A for you guys today. We're talking about dogs that are remote smart. We're talking about dogs that lose their minds when their owners come home. Littermate syndrome. Don't ever get two puppies at once. Resource guarding. Is it normal? Other aggressive behaviors, are they quote unquote normal? And what if you have a protective dog? And what if you don't mind if they do that sometime? Where do you draw the line? Can you draw the line? All that and more coming up.
Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Off Leash and Unfiltered. I'm Katie Pepe, owner of Diamond Canine Dog Training in Biddeford, Maine, specializing in e-collar training for off-leash obedience, getting dogs trained up so they can enjoy all that freedom and behavior modification, so helping people stop all those bad unwanted behaviors, jumping up, barking, all that stuff, aggression, resource guarding, anxiety. We love doing state of mind work with dogs that are anxious, nervous, and fearful, and we also offer puppy training. So that's who we are and what we do. And this podcast is here as our way to share everything we know, see, say, do, talk about, and learn with you guys. So this stuff's hard to find. This information's hard to find. I know because it was me once looking for it and I couldn't find it. So we're very, very passionate about helping people learn how to shape their dog's behavior and getting the information out there for the folks that want it because there's so much garbage on the internet. So that's who we are and what we do. And so thanks for joining us today. We're going to do a Q&A today. I love the Q&A. So these are questions that we have very, very recently received. Some of them from phone consultations and others from private lessons and board and train follow-ups. So remote smart is a big thing that we deal with in our programs. So when we send a dog home from a board and train or from private lessons, they are generally very well versed in the e-collar. They understand all of their commands. They understand how to respond to e-collar pressure. They know how to respond to corrections and things of that nature. But the mess a lot of people get themselves into is their dog knows when they have the remote and when they don't. This isn't a problem. I mean, it is a problem, but it's fixable, right? So basically when that happens, your dog is telling us that you have created a pattern you don't want to create. So you literally have taught your dog that there is only accountability when you are holding the remote. Now, this translates to any correction tool, right? So anything you use to correct your dog, if your dog, if they behave differently when you have that tool in your hand or in close proximity versus when you don't, you have taught them that. And that's not me picking on people, but it's really important for us to be clear on that if we're going to fix it, because there's no magic. There is no magic. So it's funny because people will, they don't realize they're doing it, right? So people will tell me what they think they're doing, but the dog will tell us what's really happening. So the dog never lies. They tell us, nope, the pattern is, if I don't see the remote or I don't see the bonker, there's not going to be accountability. I can get away with any monkey business I want. I don't have to listen. I can jump up on people, whatever the case may be in your dog's specific situation. They have learned that there's no accountability in that context. So if you've listened to my other episodes, you may have heard the story of my own dog and his discrimination between consequences when I am home versus when I am not home, versus when my mother is present. So he has been taught that there are consequences for eating the cat food when I am home. There are consequences for eating the cat food when I am not home. So I can leave him home all day uncrated for 8 hours. He will not touch the cat food. But he has learned that when my mother is present and I leave, once I walk out the door and it's just her there, there are no consequences. And he will absolutely go over there and eat the cat food right away, among other various annoying nuisance behaviors that he never does when I'm around. So your dog can discriminate. And just like I just described to you, the dog discriminating between who is present, they can also discriminate among many other factors in the environment as well. So your dog will know. If there is a context in which you don't provide accountability, they're going to know what that is. They'll figure it out anyway. They'll figure it out quickly. Your dog's very, very good at discovering patterns. That's they're the masters at that. So you need to go out of your way to teach them just the opposite, right? You need to go out of your way to teach your dog, even if you don't see the remote, even if you don't see the bonker or whatever the tool is that you're using in that context, that there will still be accountability. And in order to do that, you have to be skilled at correction. You have to understand your use of markers. You have to understand that it is important that you link your punishment marker to that behavior first and foremost. So for most of us, that's going to be the word no, but it can be anything you want. And it's going to be very important that you issue that marker the moment your dog does the behavior. So let's just say that the behavior is barking. Okay, your dog sees the trigger. They look at you. They don't see a remote or bonker or your tool of choice. They opt to bark. In that moment, you should mark it with a no. Go get your tool. Provide the correction. It's okay if it takes a minute. It doesn't matter. This is where everybody goes wrong because they don't think there can be a delay. But if you can't break out of that mindset and you insist on always providing your correction immediately, then your dog will remain tool smart, right? Because they are correct. You never provide a correction when you don't have the tool on you. And they will see that. And the only way to fix that is to prove to your dog that your marker, which is probably the word no, always predicts a correction, right? And then you're golden because you always have no on you and your dog knows that. So, but there are multiple layers to that, right? So your dog has to know that no predicts a correction. You have to have good timing with your word no. That means you have to follow up after you say no, even if you're lazy, even if you're tired, you don't feel like it. You have to follow up. And you have to follow up with something meaningful. So if you say no at the right time, and then you go and you walk all the way across the house and you get your remote, but then you just tap at a 5, well, so what, right? So you can see all these layers, all these different things need to be in place for you to be effective. And if you're not, your dog just knows that. They know the pattern. And it's that simple. From our most recent follow-up, they are dealing with something that is super, super common, which is dog's doing amazing, so much better, but still has way too much arousal tied to the return of their owner. So owner leaves the dog at home, goes to work, comes back. When they return, and there's other family members in the house already, they'll put the dog on place. But, you know, he pulls in the driveway, comes through the door. Dog just loses its mind. Can't hold the place command. Can't listen to anybody. Goes, you know, right off a cliff with their arousal. And this is really, really common. Especially I find in like certain breeds that just tend to get really, really intense and anxious. And a lot of that arousal gets all tied up with their bond with their owner. And it's not great. I mean, yeah, we're glad your dog is happy to see you, but that level of arousal basically gets in the way of the dog being able to follow any direction. And that can also be generalized over to other areas as well. So it's important for your dog, really the whole key, if you think about it, the whole key to all of the training we talk about is teaching your dog how to control arousal. So even if you're just nurturing this one area, ultimately you are kind of working against yourself because you are teaching your dog not to control arousal and to just be a victim of it instead, helpless to control it. So we do recommend you take some steps if that's something you deal with your dog. Some of the more obvious ones are, at a minimum, you can crate the dog so that when you come home, they're at least contained, and don't acknowledge them until they have come down to a reasonable level of arousal, right? So, and when I say don't acknowledge them, I mean, don't look at them, don't make eye contact, don't talk to them, certainly don't touch them, or don't let them out of their kennel. It's like, at a minimum, everybody can do that, right? Some of the other things you can do, if there are other people at home, like we just described in these people's situation, they can put the dog on place, but we recommend putting the dog on a tie back. So just putting the leash on the dog's flat collar, tying it to something with a loose leash so it's not tied tightly, so the dog doesn't feel like they're tethered to something. So that when they do break the command, because inevitably they're going to, at least they can't go darting across the house to the trigger, to the person, right? That's going to, number one, it's going to help discourage the behavior in the future because it wasn't productive. They weren't able to do the thing they wanted to do. Number two, it's going to make it a lot less messy to properly, it's going to make it a lot easier to properly address that situation. So when the dog obviously breaks command in that situation, we need to mark that with a no. We need to provide a correction. If the dog doesn't go back to the place caught after that, we need to give guidance, body language, maybe even leash guidance, but hopefully not, to get the dog back onto the place caught. That's going to be a lot easier if your dog is already kind of tied in place and can't go very far versus they're running all around the house like a madman. That's going to make things a lot more difficult and messy both for you and for the dog, and it's going to be more stressful. So a tie back is a great idea when you are working on situations that are extra challenging for your dog. A lot of times what really needs to happen is there needs to be a real correction to bring that arousal down. And so that was a tough thing to talk about with the dog's owner when we had this follow-up, but they totally understood and agreed and are on board with it. It's like sometimes those corrections are kind of ugly because the arousal is just so high. And there's just you have no hope of getting in there and making a difference and bringing that arousal down unless you match that intensity. But here's the thing. It's still, a second, maybe 2 seconds of discomfort. It's going to come, it's going to go, it's going to be over. And then the hope is you get your dog into a lower state of arousal, and now we can actually start to see some change and practice something different, right? But sometimes they just need someone, never mind place or any other command, they just need someone to say, hey, this thing you do where you go right off a cliff and you go nuts, it's not okay. You can't do that, right? And once you have that conversation, it's an ugly conversation, but once you have it, things get a little easier. The other thing that often needs to happen is we're just not catching the dog early enough. So instead of waiting until the owner walks through the door and the dog completely loses it, look for the first sign of arousal. So usually that's going to be when the owner pulls in, right? The dog knows the sound of their car. They know the sound of someone coming up the driveway, all that stuff. So it's usually starting a long time before they even come through the door. So person pulls into the driveway, dog lifts their head up, gets all perked up, ears are standing up, you can see them starting to get tense. That's actually the moment you want to start to have the conversation. No, don't escalate. You need to stay relaxed on place. And that doesn't mean they're going to stay completely relaxed, especially like the first time you do it, right? It might be a little bit of a process where you're chipping away at that arousal, but you have a way better chance at getting them to stay there and rehearse something different if you attack that arousal at the first sign, the first time you see it, instead of waiting until the dog is full blown, 10 of 10. So we do that a lot with our door drills. We're not just correcting the dog for getting off. We're giving them, and the taps will probably be lower in that case, right? Because the dog's not a 10 of 10, right? You're getting the dog when they're a 4 or a 5 instead of a 10. So at that level of intensity, your correction can be a little bit lower, right? And so it's just going to be like a moderate tap to say, hey, don't get crazy, right? And just get them settled back down. And then you're probably going to have to do it more than once, right? So you got to keep watching them and keep giving them that feedback. But the goal is to keep them from going into that state of arousal, right? And it will be messy. If your dog's that intense and that wild and that crazy that they fit into this category that we're talking about, even if it's just that scenario, it's not going to look perfect the first time. This is something you're going to have to rehearse a lot, but you chip away at it. So you try some different things, some of the things we just talked about, and then you ask for a little more, hopefully it gets a little bit better each time you do it until it becomes not a big deal anymore. And that's that. That's going to help your dog have way better coping skills and ability to control arousal and a better relationship with their owner, right? Because I always say, as good as it might feel for your dog to be that excited when you come home, it's actually not great. It's not great. It's not a sign of like the healthiest relationship. And it causes problems. Right? Because they're carrying that with them every time they're with you. Because that's tied to you. And that can really get in the way of listening and engaging with you when you want them to. Okay. This one is completely out of left field. But it's one that I was talking about recently with somebody on a phone call. We were talking about littermate syndrome. So this is the idea that if you adopt two littermates at the same time, that they will be, and I think everyone kind of has a different idea of what this is, but, and a lot of people have different opinions on whether or not it's even a thing, so we're going to talk about that, but it's pretty commonly thought of as two dogs that are born in the same litter. They go home to a home, they're maturing together, and everything is just 1,000 times harder, right? They're difficult to train, they're difficult to bond with, they have severe separation issues. They prioritize each other over their owners and handlers. Sometimes they have lots of conflict, too, as they mature, right? Which I think is pretty par for the course. And then you can have dog fights and things of that nature. But generally speaking, it's when you adopt two dogs at the same time and it just turns into a total mess and it gets blamed on them being litter mates. Is there any truth to this? I don't know. Do we see a lot of issues when people adopt litter mates? Yeah, but I think to be fair, we would probably see that with people that adopt two puppies at the same time, whether they're litter mates or not. I do think there might be from the, you know, in regard to the conflict aspect, I do feel like that just might be a little more likely with dogs that are related, but the truth is, I don't know. I don't know. I think that adopting two puppies at once is nuts. I wouldn't do it. It's already a lot of work. And having two can be an incredible amount of work. And you do have to pay attention to things such as, you know, are they becoming codependent on each other? Are they each getting the time they need for bonding with me, engaging with me, training with me, learning to listen to and accept direction from me? Are they both developing healthy coping skills? And I think it's too easy to kind of pawn them off on each other and, you know, have them go stay busy as opposed to going through the motions of using the structure and doing the appropriate training. And I think that in and of itself can lead to issues. So is it a thing? I don't know if it's a thing. Do we see a lot of problems with litter mates? Yes, we do. So hopefully that answers that question. I wouldn't recommend it. I really, really wouldn't. Especially same-sex puppies. So at the very least, I would say get opposite sex puppies, a male and a female. But really just, to me, it's not the best idea to get two pups at once, related or not. Resource guarding. So here is another one from a phone call where we were talking about resource guarding. And, you know, the thing is, resource guarding is just a dog behavior, right? So I often say when we're talking about aggression, people want to classify dogs as being either aggressive or not aggressive. And it just doesn't work that way. Like, everyone wants to say, well, my dog's not aggressive, right? Even if they have a bite history. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Really, it's not a black and white thing. It's not an on-off thing. It's more of a spectrum. All dogs are on it. All dogs have it in them. All dogs bite. Your dog isn't special because it bit. So, you know, even if your dog hasn't bit, I don't think you get to qualify your dog as not aggressive. And just because your dog has bit doesn't necessarily mean you get to qualify them as aggressive. So they all have it in there, and it's normal, and it's natural. That doesn't mean it's good, doesn't mean it's acceptable, doesn't mean it's safe. So dogs just have different thresholds, right? Some of them, it doesn't take much to get them to bite. Some of them, it takes a lot to get them to bite, right? They have to be, like, afraid for their life and in full self-defense mode. So you've got the whole range. But it's a normal dog behavior. Guarding resources, same thing. Normal dog behavior, very, very natural behavior. Some dogs, right, guarding resources might just be a little growl. It might even not even be a growl. It might even just be like covering the resource with their paw and sort of hovering over it, trying to like squeeze it and not let you take it away. I met a couple of golden retrievers about a month ago who would do that with their sticks, right? And they actually really enjoyed playing with people with these sticks and having people throw them. But when you went to remove the stick, they would always put their paws right over the stick and get down on the ground with it and try to keep you from taking it away. So, I mean, you could qualify that as resource guarding. But obviously, if you have a dog that growls, that may mean that the next step is they're going to bite. Or if you have a dog that bites, that's obviously dangerous. And so people ask, you know, when people see these behaviors, they get very, very concerned. But it's normal. There's nothing wrong with your dog. Should you do something about it? Probably. But it depends. You know, I meet some people that are just engaging in full-on conflict with their dog. They're going up, they're bullying the dog, they're pulling bones out of the dog's mouth, and, you know, just generally trying to dominate the dog, and it's very, very confrontational. A lot of dogs are going to respond very poorly to that. So the answer to my question is, resource guarding or other aggressive behaviors normal? Yes. They are normal. Should you do something about them? Probably. Right? Depends on the context. So dogs have to have conversations with other dogs. They have to communicate somehow, right? And so they do. They use their body language. They use their vocalizations. So if I have a dog with a resource and another dog is staring at that resource and begins approaching, the dog with the resource might lift their lip and give a little growl. Do I have a problem with that? No, not really. That's pretty normal. Right? I would classify that as a healthy communication. This thing is mine. and you can't have it. And I can see that you're thinking about it, and I'm not going to give it to you. You can't have it. Now, but some dogs go right off a cliff, right? Somebody, they have a resource. Somebody walks in the room. Dog goes, ah, I kill you. And they go out, like, rip your throat out. So that's obviously not tolerable, right? That's super dangerous. Yes, I think something needs to be done in that case. So it's all contextual. Like, I think you have to think about what's happening. Like, are we asking the dog for something unreasonable? Right? So your dog should be able to tolerate normal, healthy, non-confrontational experiences. But if a dog is being confrontational, your dog is probably going to have something to say about that. Of course, if you're there, you should not be letting that happen. You should be intervening. You should be advocating for your dog, and then they won't have to make a decision like that and engage in those behaviors anyway. Now, resource guarding toward people, kind of the same deal. I don't like my dog growling at me. I'm not going to allow that. There's going to be a punishment for that every time. But on the same token, I am not going to approach my dog and pull something out of his mouth, especially a high-value resource like a bone. I'm just not going to do that. Like, if you do that, you are literally telling your dog you want to fight with them. So what we do is we normally teach those dogs the out command, which means you need to drop that resource, move away from it. It's mine now. And obviously, we can enforce that. So there's a consequence if they don't do it, right? Most dogs, once they know that, they just do it gladly. No problem. Hey, you asked for this resource. It's yours, right? And so now you have a very healthy respect for the humans in the home. And you have a way to remove resources without conflict. And I think that's so important. Some people think they should be able to just walk up to their dog, take the bone right out of their mouth, and their dog shouldn't have a thing to say about it. And you know what? A lot of dogs won't, but a lot of dogs will. And it's a very tall order. And I'm sorry, but not all dogs are going to tolerate that because, like I said, it's very confrontational. And so you're essentially telling your dog, hey, let's fight over this resource. From their perspective, that's what's happening. So having that command in place and that respect in place, they know you can enforce what you ask for. You're going to control the resources. That being said, is there something wrong with a dog that growls at people over food, bones, toys? No. It's a normal dog behavior. Right? That doesn't mean you have to like it. It doesn't mean you have to accept it. It just means there's nothing actually wrong with the dog, right? But again, all this stuff exists on a spectrum. So you have some dogs that are a little protective over resources, and then you've got some dogs that will kill a person over resources. And I think it depends, you know, whether or not you choose to keep a dog in your home with those behaviors depends on how high are the stakes, right? So I met a family with a very large Belgian Malinois who had some severely aggressive tendencies, and they had multiple kids in their house. And when I saw the aggression in action, I was like, it's not worth it. You can't have this dog in your house. So now, is there something wrong with the dog per se? Nope, but this dog is not cut out to be a family dog. So anyways, I'm going off the rails a little bit, but resource guarding, guys, normal. Aggressive behaviors in general, normal. Can some wires be crossed and things be not quite right? Absolutely. Right? But most of the time, these behaviors are adjustable, modifiable, inhibitable, and fixable. Right? And you can teach your dog to have a healthy respect. And it doesn't mean that they're abnormal or something's wrong with them. All right, here's a good one. So I recently received a request around this. So, and lots of our customers have dogs that are quote unquote very protective. I don't like that word. I think it's more appropriate to say possessive. So dogs that are protective, especially, you know, if they're territorial and they tend to bark and growl at people that are coming into the house or people that are coming near their owner. Right? So we have all these different words, right? But really, it's all just kind of nonsense. So the definitions of these words are always kind of moving around, or they're different from everybody's perspective.
You have a territorial dog, you have a protective dog, a possessive dog. You have a dog that guards you, a dog that guards space, a dog that guards resources. It doesn't matter. Okay, you've got a dog that reacts poorly to people in an aggressive manner in whatever context. And people will ask, because obviously they want to have control over their dog. They want to be safe and keep other people safe. But then they go, well, I don't mind if they bark when someone comes up the driveway. Or, well, I don't mind if they bark when someone comes to the door. Because I live alone. And so I kind of want my dog to do that. Is that okay? Can I do that? And generally speaking, the answer is no. The answer is just no. So, because you're sending mixed messages to your dog. And here's why. We are talking about behaviors that your dog has autonomously chosen to do. Your dog is self-governing in those moments. They are deciding that the thing they hear, the person they see, the guest that walks through the door is potentially a threat and they should alert. And who knows where it will escalate from there. So your dog's deciding that all on their own. And the reason that is different from like protection training, right? Bite work, dogs that are taught to bite on command is just that. It's on command. It is not autonomous. The dog doesn't just decide, I'm going to go bite this guy. I'm going to alert on this guy. That's not happening, right? It's all very, very highly trained behaviors that are attached to verbal commands from their owner handler. It's not the dog deciding threat, 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 attack, attack, attack. And so you can't simultaneously say, I don't want you to be aggressive toward people. I don't want you to growl at my friends. I don't want you to bark at this person or that person. But if someone comes up the driveway, go ahead, lose your mind. Right? So there has to be a clear context attached to both of those things so your dog knows the pattern, what is okay and what isn't okay. And I think most people are not going to have the skills or the time or the energy. They're going to be very hard-pressed to do that, first of all. Even if you could, it's just going to be, it's too in-depth, it's too much for I think, the average person to do that and draw those very clear those very clear associations with when it is okay and when it isn't. But ultimately, again, when your dog is in that autonomous state of mind, if they're choosing to alert, if they're choosing to exhibit aggressive behaviors, then you are choosing to leave that intact and allow them to rehearse it when they want to, instead of when they are told to. Now, a lot of people's dogs bark, right, when someone comes up the driveway or to the door, and as long as they shut up when you tell them to, fine, right? But they should pretty much lose interest in the door. If you have a dog that is overly aggressive, territorial, that sort of thing, and you choose not to do that, and you leave it intact, what ultimately is probably going to end up happening, it's not going to be a burglar that gets it. It's not going to be someone that's mugging you, raping you. It's not going to be someone breaking into your house. It's going to be the mailman. It's going to be the UPS guy. It's going to be the FedEx guy, right? It's going to be the neighbor, whoever. Because those people have a much higher likelihood of actually coming into your home and onto your property. The chances of you actually having a violent encounter are very slim. And one other point I'd like to add to this is that even if you teach your dog not to be aggressively reactive toward the door, toward people coming in, toward people in general, whatever the case may be, and you tell your dog, no, you can't do that. You can't growl. You can't bark. You certainly can't bite. You can't do that stuff. If you have a violent encounter,
your dog is probably going to do those things. Unless you go out of your way to rehearse that scenario and teach your dog not to react, they're going to, right? If your dog has it in there to be quote unquote protective, trust me, you're going to see it in that situation. Sometimes we're placing too tall of an order with our dogs to discern who should get bit and who shouldn't, right? If you leave that up to your dog, you guys, that is just a disaster. So no, our answer almost 100% of the time when we're working with people and they ask us, well, is this okay? I don't mind if they do this. The answer is no, right? Especially if you have a dog that's exhibiting particularly aggressive behaviors, especially if you have a large power breed dog, that sort of thing. No, we're not going to tell you that it's okay. It's not okay for your dog to go crazy when they think there's an intruder because they don't know the difference between a 6-year-old kid and an intruder. So there you have it. That's it for today's episode, guys. It was an interesting one where we were kind of all over the map, but these are, I think good questions that cover a lot of bases for a lot of folks. So hopefully you got something out of it. Please, please, please send me your questions, thoughts, suggestions, ideas, things you want discussed, things you want to know about. I would love to hear from you. Katie@diamondcanine.com. That's KATI@diamondcanine.com. Until next time.